We're going to be talking about the classics, the books that you read when you were in school, when you were in high school, and in some cases grade school, and how much they've changed or how much they haven't changed in terms of the curriculum. Like, are they still teaching these? And which ones stayed with you? Which books did you like? Which books did you hate that you were assigned to read in high school? 312-981-7200. There's a little article here about a thing called disrupt texts. And the headline first reads, is The Great Gatsby really required reading? I can answer that. No. Dan, did you read Gatsby in school?
Yes, we did.
And are you a fan of Great Gatsby?
I'm not. We had an interesting line of distinction because we read Great Gatsby and Grapes of Wrath back to back.
Right.
And so we had a kind of like a clear line of demarcation between the class, between the Grapes of Wrath people and the Great Gatsby.
Yeah,
people.
We've talked about that before, and I know Grapes of Wrath is a big book for you.
Yeah,
but I'm not a fan of the Great Gatsby. I had to read it when I was in high school, and I just don't think it's a very good book. And I think they made two pretty lousy movies out of it as well. Esmeralda, did you read Gatsby when you were in school?
I did.
Yeah, did you like it?
Yeah, I think I enjoyed it. From what I remember, not hating it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just didn't do it for me. Now, granted, you know, many of the books that we were assigned in school have stayed with me. Catcher in the Rye is my favorite book of all time, and I had to read that for school, and that's my favorite book. So that one clearly made an impact on me and stayed with me. But this article here that says. This is a article written here that says, when I ask first-year college students what books that they read in high school, they sound suspiciously like the books that I read over 30 years ago. Great Gatsby, Lord of the Flies, Catcher in the Rye, and the like. Surely something has changed since the days of mullets and shoulder pads. Four educators, Trisha Ibavaria, Lorena Gurman, Kimberly Parker, and Julia Torres, are aiming to foster a nationwide discussion to challenging existing sentiment about these books while suggesting the persistence of the traditional canon is crowding out other perspectives. Their project is Disrupt Texts, and it has quickly become one of my favorite vehicles for reconsidering my own thinking about books. Disrupt Texts uses a Twitter slow chat where, over the course of a week, a series of questions about a selected book are released under the hashtag Disrupt Texts hashtag. Teachers, librarians, authors, and others contribute to the discussion, which is later compiled at the Disrupt Texts website. The questions are open-ended. For example, a discussion of To Kill a Mockingbird opened with questions about why the book is widely taught. And then it says, for what reasons might teachers include this text in their curriculum? What is the value of teaching this text? Do you have to teach this text and why? And then later the discussion moves to questioning the meaning of the text, often throwing the notion that the texts being a product of their own time, while To Kill a Mockingbird is a product of its time, it's worth asking what voices from that era haven't been heard and valued because To Kill a Mockingbird has become so ubiquitous. Much of the discussion among educators focuses on how using these texts can be enhanced by injecting marginalized perspectives. This is the disrupt part of disrupt texts. Rather than taking in single perspective as the perspective for all, the discussion challenges the notion of a single fixed history. This is the root of critical thinking and a prerequisite to lasting learning. Education isn't merely transmitting information. Student must be taught to make meaning for themselves. One goal, in Parker's words, is to provide, quote, underrepresented populations who are never considered when the canon was created in the first place. They want access to stories to reflect their own experiences. If we've confined the texts enshrined before I was born, this goal will never be achieved. Some people threaten when these texts are questioned, but it's worth asking who's been left out of our broader cultural conversation. What are we missing out on by insisting some books remain fixed in place? For those who do feel uncomfortable with the notion of disrupting these classics, there's a suggestion that we first question why and where the reaction is coming from and remind us that it's difficult to believe a handful of books that absolutely must be taught given how many great books exist. So disrupt texts discussions raise points that rise to a certain amount of discomfort. Our relationships with books can feel really deeply personal, and to be asked to view these books through the eyes of another requires an occasional deep breath after and a moment of reflection. It's an amazing thing to see a book you've read many times in a brand new light. It's even better to be introduced to books that you didn't even know existed. So that's one of the things this Disrupt Texts is sort of challenging. These books that, you know, that have been part of a school curriculum forever. I went to high school. I graduated high school in 1983. And, when we were assigned books and stuff in the late 70s, and it was still Gatsby, Lord of the Flies, Catcher in the Rye, and all those other ones. I'm also thinking what books, more recent books, should be taught. And if you're a teacher or you are part of the educational system, have they changed these books? Has anything changed over the years? Now, Dan, your wife teaches what grade?
She is fifth grade.
Fifth grade. Now, so they're not assigned anything at that level.
They are assigned certain things, more of the historical. You know, she doesn't teach English, so it's not her per se. But
yeah,
they are assigned various things. One of the interesting things she did have to deal with was she had a student who at one point was in second grade, but was already reading at high school level.
Wow.
And so she had to find appropriate reading materials for somebody that young,
yeah,
but that advanced. Because
yeah,
obviously stuff in high school, you're dealing with a lot of heady things,
sure,
and a lot of things maybe a second grader shouldn't be learning about or
yep,
knowing about.
Yep.
So,
that's a challenge.
Yeah. So it was a lot of historical nonfiction, you know, reading about people's lives and things like that. But it is a dance to try to find something that's both interesting and
appropriate.
Appropriate. Yeah.
That's tough, man. That's really, really tough. I never even thought about that, but that makes total sense. Now, what did you have to read when you were in school? Excuse me.
Yeah, so the three that stick with me were the Dubliners by James Joyce.
Mm-hmm.
God bless my teacher. He didn't force Ulysses on us.
Oh, my God.
And so we did the Dubliners, and that was one of my favorite books. A book by James Baldwin called Going to Meet the Man, which is a collection of short stories. You know, they say the good books find you. That was a book randomly assigned to me that I had to do a term paper on, and is one of my, favorite books of all time. So,
yeah.
And then the previous mentioned, Grapes of Wrath,
yeah,
which is a book I adore and kind of hold hard. Because like I said, you know, it was never confrontational when we had those debates, but it did kind of, like this article suggests, it did make you kind of re-examine why you feel the way you do,
yeah,
and try to defend the way you do, but also be respectful and try to see the other person's side and things like that, especially because you have two diametrically opposed parties in those books. You have the very rich and you have the very poor, and kind of, you know, why you feel the way you do and what similarities are there and what differences are there. And, you know, did I side with this group because,
yeah,
my grandfather was a janitor, you know, and my mom was an immigrant, or, you know, stuff like that. So
yeah,
that was kind of the fun stuff.
That's one of the best parts of talking about books or any art, you know, in general, because you bring your personal story to it. You can't help, you know what I mean? You can't help but do that. You know, you do that with movies as well. Like certain movies will really hit you because of your personal story, because what you bring with it. You can't not do that. And books are also very personal on your own level, because, you know, like a movie, you look, you see all the stuff that's on the screen, all the performances that are there, everybody sees it that way. You know what I mean? Like you see it, it's presented that way. But when you read a book, you see it the way that you want to see it. Like whatever is in your head is specifically in your head, and that includes your personal story behind it. And so it makes it even more intimate, I think, you know, than seeing a movie, even though it's the same process. You bring your personal story to it. I think a lot of people I don't think a lot of people have the same reaction. Like, I'll give you a real quick one. I don't think a lot of people have this the same reaction that I have to Colossal. Like, it was a deeply personal, it was a movie that I hit me on a level because of my personal story that I may not, you know, it won't strike someone in that way. And I mean, it was number one on my movie list last year. Nobody put that movie in there,
right?
But it was this, my personal story was brought to it, and that's how it affected me, and that's how it affects art in general, you know, but books specifically, because of that element of you creating the story, the visuals, the story in your head. Esmeralda, what did you read when you were in school? You were assigned you said Gatsby.
Yeah, I also read The Giver. We did read Canterbury Tales, not the Iliad. The Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And I think
How old were you when you read
that
The
was
Odyssey?
In high school.
In high school, okay.
And I think Where the Red Fern Grows.
Oh, sure.
I remember reading.
Mm-hmm. Now, did a lot of these stay with you? Have they become favorites of yours? Have you gone back to them sometimes?
I haven't, but I still remember The Giver quite clearly.
Yeah.
Like that one, that one did stick. The only one that did stick was Animal Farm, but that was, I picked that one up because we had to write a book report. Mm-hmm. So I did it on that.
Yeah.
And I really liked it.
Yeah, Animal Farm was one that we read, too. Animal Farm, I believe I read in eighth grade. I think that was one that I read before high school. I think I was in eighth grade when I read
Animal
Farm.
Yeah, it was somewhere around there.
Yeah. I think Animal Farm is great, and I think Orwell in general is really good. But those are some of these books, though, they stay with you. They really do, and some don't. So, anyway, we're looking at the assigned books in high school. And with these books, did these books stay with you? Or if you went to a school where they had some alternate titles, some more recent titles, and what titles would you pick now? You know, for modern writing, what would you pick? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, talk and text. We're talking about books. Which ones were you taught and which ones stayed with you? And we'll reminisce a little bit about some of those as well. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720. WGN Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 301 area code requesting James Taylor, Long Ago and Far Away. So there you go. Coming up a little bit later on, we are going to be talking about road trip movies. Our good friend Colin Suter is going to be going on a road trip in a couple of weeks. And he put together his list of favorite road trip movies. And we're going to talk about some of those great road trip movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Speaking of road trips, you know, how about a book on the road? There's one for you that might have been assigned to read when you were in school. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about these books that perennial books that have been assigned over many, 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 many years to students to read. And should we freshen that list up a little bit and maybe put some new stuff on there? And which ones stayed with you and which ones did you like that you were assigned to read? 815 area code says, The Outsiders, good book, good movie. The stars in that movie are unbelievable. They all had a turn on the A-list. Yeah, you look back at the cast of The Outsiders, everybody in that movie became a star, like every single person in that movie. Yeah, The Outsiders is one of those things where, you know, I read the book. I love the book. I think the book was great. And I really like the movie as well. And, you know, Dan, I've mentioned this before. A bunch of years ago, like 18 or so years ago, for a couple of years in a row during a summer, I was invited to the Johnsburg Public Library. The idea was that we would watch a movie. Read the book. We would get the book. The students would get the book. The kids would get the book. They'd read the book, and then we'd all watch the movie together, and then I would lead the discussion, you know, on the parallels between the books and the movies and what we all thought. And so the first one that we did was The Outsiders. And I hadn't read The Outsiders at that point. I hadn't read The Outsiders since, you know, probably high school or something. And I hadn't seen the movie in a long time either. The movie came out when I was a senior in high school, so I read the book. I probably read the book maybe 4 years before the movie came out, so it was still kind of fresh in my head when I saw the movie, and so that was a great experience, you know, with these kids. But the second one that we did when they invited me back the next year was The Princess Bride, and I've told you this before. So they sent me the book, and I'd never read the book. I'd seen the movie, you know, as everybody has. Everybody's seen The Princess Bride a bunch of times, and you know, enjoyed it. I'm not as huge a fan as Princess Bride the movie as everybody else is. I like it. I know it's a movie. People adore that movie, and God bless them. I understand that. It just didn't strike me as much as most people. And I'd never read the book, and so when I was, you know, invited to go out to the library, they sent me a copy of the book, and I read it, and it's 9,000 times better than the movie. I mean, it's really so much better than the movie. And the movie's good. The movie's entertaining. Right. But if you've only seen the movie, you really got to read the book. And weird, Goldman wrote the screenplay, which is interesting because the book is much darker, much funnier, a lot funnier. And the tone of it is completely different. It's not this, you know, sort of romantic fairy tale. I'm going to sneeze.
Because it's in tight.
I thought it might be a double. I usually only have singles.
Sure.
But anyway, it's, you know, it's not, it doesn't have the same tone that Rob Reiner gave to it, this sort of light fairy tale kind of romantic tone to it. It's much more sarcastic and edgy. And it wasn't what it wasn't at all what I expected. Like, the narration is really smart alecky. Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of that in the movie, a little bit of that in the movie, but it's overwhelming in the book. And so that was one of those deals where, I mean, that's a different topic. It's like, you know, when you read a book as opposed to the movie,
right?
And the movie's fine, it's sweet and everything. But seriously, if you've not read the book. I mean, I'm assuming you like the movie.
I did like the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you read the book?
I have not read the book.
Esmeralda, you like Princess Bride, right? The movie?
Yeah. I haven't read the book either.
Yeah. It's so different, though. I mean, it really is. Because, you know, like all these years, Princess Bride has been out, you know, I mean, that came out in 86, 87, something like that.
Right.
So it's been around for a really long time. And when I read the book, it, you know, the movie had been out for like 20 years or something like that at that point, 18, 20 years. And I was like, whoa!
Yeah. I know we have to break here, but what was the reaction of the crowd? I mean, because had they seen the movie even?
Yeah, the kids had seen the movie. I mean, it's like, it's a, you know, I mean, this is a loved movie, a beloved movie. And the kids had seen it, and they too thought the book was a lot different. It wasn't what they expected. You know, and a lot of the kids in the room preferred the movie because it's the movie. You know what I mean? And it's like, they were kids. And it's one of kids, you know, kids love that movie. So they like, but I like the book more. So anyway, all right. We're going to get back to talked about what the assigned books that you've read in school, what stayed with you, and what didn't, and should we put some new ones in that in there? All right, we'll take a break here on WGN. The news is next. Great, great, great song. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio on WGN, and we are here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. 301 area code, pick James Taylor, and that's Fire and Rain. Okay, welcome back, everybody. We are talking about books that were assigned to you in school, and the ones that get assigned over and over again for years and years and years, and talking about some that could be added, maybe. And which ones stuck with you and which ones didn't? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to be talking about road movies, road trip movies, and the pigeons and the penguins have gone out, right, Dan? They're sent.
They're en route.
They're en route, and Skip Skipley is on the way for another edition of For the Record. That's our music game that we play. It's a little trivia game that Esmeralda and I battle wits on, it covers all kinds of types of music, but it's an 80s and 90s specifically, which was very much like our old pop-up video game that we played. And we'll get to hear Esmeralda sing, which is why there are a bunch of cats and a bunch of skyscraper climbing raccoons and The Rock.
By the way, the penguins
are
much happier about the transition to the submarine than the pigeons.
Than the pigeons are. I would imagine.
Penguins used to hate the airplane, and the pigeons loved it. And now the pigeons hate it, and the penguins love it.
You know what? You got to be fair.
Right.
You got to be fair. So it's 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'd be getting some texts here if you want to jump in about your assigned school books. Let's see. 765 said we were assigned Huckleberry Finn. Oh, yeah, Huckleberry Finn. Wuthering Heights, Moby Dick, The Fire Next Time, and East of Eden. And Shannon says, had to read Heart of Darkness, and I still love it, and Apocalypse Now. Unfortunately, I had to read entirely too much Ernest Hemingway because I went to Oak Park and River Forest High School. So they just do that? Seriously? They just go out of their way to teach Hemingway there? That's pretty funny, man.
I wonder what Sandberg's like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hemingway grew up in Oak Park and went to... Yeah, I know. That's funny, man, that they'd say, okay, we're going to have you read a bunch of... Does Steinmetz High School make you study Playboy? Is that how that works? He went to Steinmetz, right, Hefner?
I think so.
And then Libertyville High School, you get to watch... You get to watch, like, Streetcar Named Desire and The Godfather because Marlon Brando rode his motorcycle down the hall. You guys remember that story? Marlon Brando went to high school in Libertyville and got kicked out because he rode his motorcycle down the hallway?
Yep, and it was Steinmetz.
It was Steinmetz, yes. Hugh Hefner's alma mater. So I've got here these list of books that that have been assigned in high school for years. To Kill a Mockingbird, obviously. Now, that one wasn't assigned. I read that one on my own. Yeah, that one was, we didn't have to read. Maybe it was assigned in certain classes, but I didn't. I remember not being assigned To Kill a Mockingbird and just going out and reading that one on my own. Esmeralda, have you read To Kill a Mockingbird?
I have, yeah, and that was assigned.
That one was assigned. That's a great book. I mean, that kind of goes without saying. It's a great book, and they made a really great movie out of that. You ever read any Jane Austen, Esmeralda?
Did not.
A little Pride and Prejudice?
Did not.
That's been assigned a lot. We didn't get assigned Jane Austen when I went to school. And they made some good movies out of out of some of those. Did you read any Shakespeare when you were in school?
We read Romeo and Juliet.
That's what's next here, Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. What did you think?
I mean, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was, you know, you had to really pay attention to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's really funny what's happening on this ridiculous thing that's happening on Big Brother. On Big Brother, they assign punishments for certain house guests. And one of the house guests, this girl, Haley, whenever there's a big announcement, like they through the loudspeakers inside the house, whenever the announcer says, to read or not to read, she must get up wherever she is, put on a costume, stand on a soapbox, whatever room they give her, and she has to read from Hamlet until they say to not read. And sometimes it's like 45 minutes, an hour at a time where she's got to read. So they show like the house guests, they're like, oh, that's really funny. Yay. So she gets up there and she's doing like this dramatic reading. She's got Hamlet in her hands and she's reading it. But then as the time they do like a dissolve that she's been up there reading this for a long time. Finally, the house guests are like, this isn't funny anymore, man. I got to get the hell out of here. And then they go off to different rooms. Then they just leave her there. They tell her specific rooms to do it. They showed a montage on last night's show of all the places. Like they have her in the bathroom, and one of the house guests is like, "I have to go to the bathroom. Get out of here!" And it's like a little. It's the only place that they have any privacy, really. And so she's in there reading to no one. Like the door is closed, and she's in there reading Hamlet out loud. She has to read it out loud. And sometimes it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and wakes up the entire room. And she gets up and she has to stand on this thing and read it. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous, but it's Big Brother. I mean, that's what it's a ridiculous show. So, let's see. 301 area code says that I like Lord of the Flies the best, and Great Expectations led me to read more Dickens. Yeah, I read Great Expectations. Another one that I didn't read that wasn't assigned to me. I just read that one on my own. Dickens is sometimes tough, man. It's kind of a challenge to get through Dickens sometimes, man. It takes him 15 pages to describe something that you could like do in a minute. You know what I mean? Lord of the Flies is a great book. I love Lord of the Flies, and made a couple of movies out of that. Dan, you know they made two versions of it.
I did not know they made two versions.
Yeah, there's the one from the 60s, and then there was one that was made in 1990 with Baltasar Getty. I can't remember who else is in the cast. It was really good, though. It was really, really good. Yeah. So, did you read Lord of the Flies?
I did.
Then what about you?
I didn't know.
No, Dan, you read it?
I did read it.
I think it's great.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a great, great book. You should read that one, Esmeralda, if you get time.
At all. Yeah,
it's a good one. Let's see. 815 area code says all the books that were assigned reading for me when I was in high school were like Fahrenheit 451. By the way, don't watch the HBO, and it killed me that it was so bad. The HBO, the current HBO version of it, they made a movie out of it for an HBO. And shockingly, it's shockingly bad, considering the two leads. Dan, you know who the two leads are, right? In it?
Yeah, Shannon and Michaels.
The Michaels.
Michael
B. Jordan and Michael Shannon. I mean, what? And it's terrible. It's terrible. 1984, Brave New World, and Eli Whitney's book have been banned in certain places. 956 area code says Of Mice and Men was an awesome book. I read it growing up in middle school. Yeah, Of Mice and Men, I got assigned. I think that was eighth grade as well. I think Of Mice and Men was grade school. I think it was that was in eighth grade. There's another another one that they made different movie versions of. Dan, did you ever see the one with Malkovich and Sinise?
Just bits and pieces of it.
It's really good.
Through.
And you wouldn't think, because I don't know, you know, Malkovich doesn't seem like, you know, you wouldn't think of him for that part, but he's really good in it. It's a different kind of take. He's really good in it, though. 773 area code said read The Jungle and Call of the Wild in high school. All right. 708 says Bright Lights Big City. Jay McInerney's book? That was assigned to read? Wow.
Or it might be a modern one that he's suggesting.
Oh, a modern one that he's... I was going to say, okay. You want to learn about drugs? Yeah. By the way, a very underrated movie, Bright Lights Big City. Very, very underrated movie. And Michael J. Fox is really, really good in it. So is Kiefer. Kiefer's very good. Swoosie Kurtz is in there. I like that movie a lot. Bright Lights, Big City. Yeah, maybe, you know, you could assign that one. Jeff in San Diego said, in eighth grade, I had to read The Odyssey, which I liked, but was bored in class and made me, I made a flip book into my favorite James Bond movie, License to Kill. All right. Peter in Decatur said, Catcher in the Rye. I loved it. Kept wanting to reread it. It prompted me to read Franny and Zooey. Yeah. Yeah, no, you know, J.D. Salinger, you know, was a complete recluse, and everybody wanted, you know, everybody wanted him to write more. He dated Elaine Joyce for a while. That's one of my favorite stories ever. He's sitting at home, J.D. Salinger sitting at home. You know this story, Esmeralda?
I don't.
Elaine Joyce was this staple on 70s game shows. She currently is married to Neil Simon, but she was married to a guy named Bobby Van, and they were like a celebrity couple. He was a dancer, and they were, you know, they toured around. She sang and danced. She was really, really pretty. She's very, 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 very pretty. And she, Elaine Joyce, was on Match Game all the time. And she was like on game shows and, you know, did talk shows and stuff. Didn't do a lot. I mean, she did some TV work here and there and some variety shows and things, but she was mostly like a stage singer and dancer, and she was married to Bobby Van. And they were like a pretty cute celebrity couple in the 70s. So Bobby Van passed away. He was very young. He passed away. And Elaine Joyce, you know, continued to do TV, and she would appear on Match Game. And again, very vivacious, blonde, very attractive, Elaine Joyce. So the story is that J.D. Salinger, you know, who's just been a hermit for years and years and years and years, didn't write anything, didn't go out in public, would watch Match Game, you know, and became infatuated with Elaine Joyce, and he called CBS. J.D. Salinger called CBS and said, yeah, listen, this is J.D. Salinger. Can you put me in contact with Elaine Joyce? Because I would like to talk with her. And so they're like, yeah, yeah, you're J.D. Salinger, sure. And so they ended up getting in contact, and they went on a few dates. They dated for a while. Like, so Elaine Joyce actually dated J.D. Salinger. But I always thought it was, like, the best opening line ever. You know, Dan, you might like the how much does a polar bear weigh.
Right.
But I think, hi, how you doing? I'm the author of Catcher in the Rye. I think that's a much better opening line.
Yeah, that's pretty solid.
Hey, you know, I wrote at Catcher in the Rye. Want a date? That's you're going to get a yes 9 times out of 10.
Esmeralda?
Yes. It'd get you somewhere.
There's no question about it. Yeah, how you doing? I'm J.D. Salinger. And the detail of this that I love the most, other than it just being a great story, you know, and the idea that J.D. Salinger and Elaine Joyce dated, I don't know why I find that just, you know, knowing each one of them and what they did and what they, you know, what they contributed to the world, it's just hilarious that they dated. But the best detail is that J.D. Salinger watches Match Game. The author of Catcher in the Rye would watch Richard Dawson and Charles Nelson Reilly and Brett Summers. And then he wants to date Elaine Joyce. Well, all of us did. All of us wanted to date Elaine Joyce when we watched Match Game. She was really adorable, and she was really hot. And so it would be like, but, you know, none of us can call up and go, how you doing? My name's Nick DiGilio. I'd like to talk with Elaine Joyce. Yeah, okay, sure, right away. But if you call up and go, "How you doing? I'm J.D. Salinger," you get right through. That's one of my favorite stories. That's one of my favorite stories. I've told it before, but I don't care. I love that story. Let's see. 773 Audio Court said we had to read 1984 in Wuthering Heights. Nobody read the book, so they made us watch the movie instead. Now, Dan, you're going to answer no to this because you're a great person and a great worker and you were a great student. Did you ever do Cliff's Notes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
But
without reading the book?
Supplement.
Oh,
never,
see, of course it was a supplement for you.
No, I skip most of the time it was a supplement. Although we had Spark Notes. Did you have Spark Notes, Esmeralda?
Yeah, but I never used them.
Yeah. What were Spark Notes?
Just it's Cliff Notes online. So they were the Napster of Cliff Notes. And
they also had, I'd go there because they had quizzes.
They did have quizzes. So that was nice. And it was nice for like Shakespeare that you'd be like, if you missed something, you know, they would point it out. But The Brothers Karamazov, I've never read, but I used the Cliff Notes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. By the way, quizzes on Spark Notes was like, what kind of Twinkie are you? It was like stupid quizzes.
FYI. Oh, you like BuzzFeed?
Almost. Yeah, it was like, what's your real sign? They were all like really silly quizzes.
Like, which Golden Girl are you?
Yeah, I don't understand what the whole thing was. And then it turned into something else, I think, from Spark Notes.
Are Cliff's Notes still around?
Yeah.
With their yellow and black striped covers?
They are, yeah.
Yeah, I used them a bunch of times. Without reading the book. See the movie, get the Cliff's Notes. That's what you do. Oh, man. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk more books. And in general, what are some of your favorite books? What books do you recommend to people? What books have you purchased? Do you buy books for certain people? Do you buy certain books for people? Like, I bought you a copy of Underworld, didn't I?
You did, yes.
I've purchased Underworld, and this is not exaggeration. I think I've purchased Underworld maybe 15 times. I've bought 15 copies of Underworld. Esmeralda, I think I'm going to have to buy you a copy of Underworld.
Oh,
Because I just buy it for friends.
Don't have anywhere to play it.
No, it's a book.
Oh.
It's a book.
I don't have anywhere to read.
Oh,
read it.
Okay. All right. It is quite, I mean, it's a hefty book. It's like 900 pages. Don DeLillo wrote it. I think it's one of the greatest works of art of the 20th century. I truly do. And
But you said it was Waterworld?
No, Underworld.
Oh, Underworld.
Yeah.
I think
not Waterworld. No,
like,
not Waterworld.
I don't have.
No.
I can't.
No. Underworld. Underworld by Don DeLillo. It is.
Well, I thought you said Waterworld, which makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense coming out of my mouth.
So.
You know, but no, this is not. This is the other world that I like. It's Underworld. And I do, and
oh,
I no,
okay.
I don't. I mean, I love Waterworld, but I don't consider it one of the greatest works of art of the 20th century.
I mean, that's why I was like, okay.
I know, but I do, however, legitimately think that Underworld by Don DeLillo is one of the greatest works of art of the 20th century. And it's a book that I've purchased for girlfriends. I've purchased it for wives. I've purchased it for friends because I want people to read it. It's a time consumer though, Esmeralda. If you're ever going to pick it up, because it's close to 900 pages. It's an epic.
Well, as long as it's not,
it's not. Waterworld. It's not even remotely associated with Waterworld, Esmeralda. It is truly one of the greatest books of all time. There's a book now. See, here's the thing, Dan. If they assigned Underworld, the kids would have to. It would take an entire year,
right?
They would take them.
They have to get those Wheeling suitcases.
Yeah, it's a hefty tome. Let me just say that hefty tome. That was one of my college names on the radio. Yeah, hefty tome.
Yeah, Esmeralda, you missed out. We met Meat Raffle, who did the sports.
Yeah, Meat Raffle.
Oh.
Yeah, Meat Raffle did the sports.
With Broccoli Rob?
With Broccoli Rob, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is a meat raffle. Oh, you know what? I got to ask Cochran this morning. Meat raffling, Esmeralda, this is a thing that's common in Minnesota. They raffle off meat everywhere. We talked about.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Get a good prime rib?
Yeah. So, meat raffling. But it's a thing. That's a thing in Minnesota, meat raffling. So I have to ask Cochran about that this morning when I get on there at 6:20. Okay, let's take a break. We got we're a break. That's what we're going to do. We'll take a break and we'll talk more books. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday, yeah! And that is War. 708 area code requesting War all day music. So we get to hear two more songs by War. Yeah! I have no issue with that whatsoever. So we're talking about assigned books in school and J.D. Salinger hanging out with Elaine Joyce. what were some of the books that that you loved? Or what do you think? Maybe there are some that you can just suggest that we put in there. So 312-981-7200. So also here, we've got The Great Gatsby here. The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. That's another one that was assigned, but I didn't read that one. It was assigned to a different class, but I didn't read it. I mean, I eventually did read it. Actually, you know why I read Scarlet Letter and why I read some other books?
Why is that?
Because of authors, because of the game Authors. Because I would play the game Authors, and I would see these titles of books and stuff, and one of the authors featured in the original card game of Authors was Nathaniel Hawthorne. Scarlet Letter, hey, how about that version with Demi Moore, huh?
Oh, boy, yeah.
That was so bad. Gary Oldman, man, what are you doing? What are you doing in that movie? Let's see. We got Midsummer Night's Dream by Shakespeare. You know, I was never assigned any Shakespeare. Dan, did you get assigned any Shakespeare?
We had one Shakespeare every year in high school.
Which do you remember which ones you...
Freshman year was Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
Sophomore year was Julius Caesar. I forget what we had junior year.
Did you do Midsummer Nights?
It might have been Midsummer Nights.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the romances. But senior year, we had to read all four tragedies.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, one of them I won't mention,
mm-hmm.
as you know. Oh, yes. by the way, Armie Hammer was on Kimmel. Or Colbert, because he's on Broadway in Straight White Men, which is ironic considering the last movie he was in. but anyway, so Armie Hammer, and he's just making his theater debut. He did some theater when he was studying, but he's making his Broadway debut. And he didn't know about some of the superstitions, and he was telling these stories about how stage managers almost killed him. Now, he knows about the Scottish play. He knows that one because that's a legendary one. You can't, if you're in a theater, you cannot say the name of the Scottish play, which I won't say anywhere. I don't say it in theaters. I don't say it. I never say it. But it's the play by Shakespeare that it's a tragedy and it's, all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about. It's a Scottish play. So he didn't make that mistake because somebody would have killed him. Somebody would have killed Armie Hammer on Broadway. You're in a Broadway theater and you say the name of the Scottish play, they would have killed him. But what he did do, the mistake that he did do, was he whistled. Now, you're not supposed to whistle. You're not supposed to whistle. Do you know this one, Dan, the superstition?
No.
There are a lot of theater superstitions. We're all nuts. People who act or are a part of theater, we're all insane. We're all crazy. But yeah, there's, the Scottish play. There's the shoes on a dressing table. You can't put your shoes on a dressing table. There are a couple more. But the whistling one. Here's what it comes back to. In the old days, when you would whistle, that would mean that you were that was a sign to the stage hand to undo a rope and drop a curtain or to drop a light. So if you whistle in a theater, they're afraid that something's going to fall and kill you. So Armie Hammer's back there whistling, and the stage manager goes, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And he's like, "I'm sorry, I can't. I'm really sorry." Poor Armie Hammer. All right, we got to take a break, and we'll come back with more news coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs for you to request. 708 area code requesting some War. That's The World Is a Ghetto. And it is Nick DiGilio here. I'm your overnight dude, weekday mornings from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., and we are here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Thursday here, and Skip Skipley on the way by ship, by sub. He'll get here. We'll have an edition of For the Record to play a little bit later on, and we are going to talk about road trip movies in honor of the fact that our good friend Colin Suter put a list of his favorites together because he's going to be doing a road trip in a couple of weeks. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about assigned reading, books that you were assigned to read, Which ones did you love? Which ones did you have some struggling with? And maybe some newer ones could be added to the curriculum. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. By the way, Dan, this is not on the subject, but I was just scrolling through Facebook during the news. Have you seen the giant Jeff Goldblum statue?
I have. I believe Esmeralda said that she thinks she took a vacation to the wrong part of the world.
Yeah. I didn't know that was there.
I think it's temporary. My guess is that it's temporary.
I made an even graver mistake.
I believe it's in honor of Jurassic World opening in London. Because Jurassic World opened here a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's now just opening in London. So for those of you who might not know, there's this, it's a picture of Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park, right?
Yes.
But it's become like this really sort of famous meme and GIF. Like the best one is where they superimpose Sam Neill on him. You know the scene in Jurassic Park where Sam Neill is like putting his ear, he's rubbing the dinosaur and putting his ear to the heart of the dinosaur to hear him. They've taken that and they've put Sam Neill on Jeff Goldblum's chest because it's Jeff Goldblum in a sexy pose with his shirt open. And so they've made a statue out of it, and now it's a giant statue. So people can do the Sam Neill thing. They can actually, because it's that big, where you can actually look like a miniature Sam Neill, like hugging and listening to the heartbeat of Jeff Goldblum. So if you're in London, you can do that. Esmeralda, that's the pose you'd have to do if you went.
Oh, of course.
So, but I don't know. I just found this thing to be endlessly amusing. I just think that's hilarious.
That is pretty awesome.
And, yeah. Now, you know, Sam Neill wasn't aware of this this thing until it was shown to him. I think it was on Conan. I think when Sam Neill was on, because this is a few years ago when they first started doing that meme, because I think it's like maybe, you know, it's got to be like, that GIF has got to be 3-4 years old, right? It's got to be.
Yeah, at least.
At least. So I remember this years ago, he was on with Conan, and Conan was like, have you seen this thing that they put together on the internet? And Sam Neill's like, no. I haven't, and so they show it to him, and he loses it. Loses it, laughing his ass off about it. So, all right. Okay, so we're getting back to some books here. Hey, maybe some Michael Crichton should be added to the curriculum. You see how I bring it full circle?
Bravo.
I'm not kidding. I don't kid around. Tom says, 8th grade English class assignment, Les Miserables. We had the whole year to complete it. Ugh. Well, at least you didn't have to watch the movie with Russell Crowe. 815 area code says, being a truck driver, I love being able to read going down the road. So in the 20 years of driving, I've listened to over 3,000 books of all different genres, and a good reader is always important when listening. You guys ever do books on tape?
Eileen does it a lot.
Does she?
Yeah.
She's in the car a lot?
Yeah, just because, you know, depending on traffic, when she's leaving school to pick up the girls, she's got a good solid half hour.
Now, as a person who listens to a lot of books on tape, does she have, because, you know, there are like 4 or 5 people that kind of dominate the job of reading the books. Like, does she have like a favorite reader?
You know, she hasn't said anything about that, but we did have a kid's book that we listened to that was narrated by Tony Shalhoub, which was kind of fun. He did all the voices, too, so that was,
cool.
He did a really nice job with it.
Yeah. Some people are really good at it, you know, and it's always nice, I think. If it's the author, because they're going to read it the way that they want, you know, it to be read. George Saunders does his books on
tape. Oh, nice.
He, by the way, again, I've mentioned this a million times, the best writer in America, as far as I'm concerned. He's the best. Esmeralda, have you ever read any George Saunders?
No, I haven't.
He specializes in short stories. He's actually from Chicago. He's an astonishing writer.
Childhood friends with Bill Leff.
Yeah, childhood friends with Bill Leff. He's amazing. George Saunders is amazing. And you know, it's a short, he specializes in short, he's written one novel, but he specializes in short stories. So, you know, you can put his books down and read them at your leisure, bro. But he's amazing and a very cool guy and a really, really, really cool guy. I've had him on the show a few times and I know that Bill had him on a bunch of times, right, Dan?
Yeah, a few times. Yeah.
He's a great guy. I got to meet him in person a couple of times. He's phenomenal and he is just, I love them. Esmeralda, do you ever done books on tape?
I tried to listen to Aziz Ansari's, that book that he had, and I couldn't
Did he do the reading?
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
I couldn't get into it.
Yeah, it's kind of a specific thing. But yeah. Dan, now have you seen Lady Bird yet?
No, I have not seen Lady Bird yet.
Do you know the opening scene?
I do not.
The opening scene is they're driving in the car. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the scene. That's, you know, where Saoirse jumps out of the car because she doesn't want to hear Laurie Metcalf complaining. Mm-hmm. So she just jumps out of the car. While the car is going, Saoirse just jumps out and ends up, like, breaking her wrist. So for the rest of the movie, she's got this cast on. But no, the beginning of the movie, before that argument ensues, is them in the car finishing up Grapes of Wrath book on tape, because she took her to a college to look, you know, to touring some colleges.
There you go.
And so the opening of the movie is them listening to the crying at the last few words of Grapes of Wrath on books on tape. That's the opening scene of the movie. Thought of you immediately. Sure. When I saw it. Paul in Aurora said we had to read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and then watch the movie and write the comparison contrast. That's fun. That's pretty fun. That one I read on my own, but it had been assigned. I remember when I was a senior, the juniors were assigned One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and we weren't when I was a junior. And I was like, man, because I read the book. I read the book because I love the movie so much. And Dan, have you read the book?
No, I haven't.
Ken Kesey. Esmeralda, have you read One Flew?
No.
Have you seen the movie, Esmeralda?
I have, yeah.
Okay. Let me just explain the difference, because the movie is completely different, but it's a great movie, and it's got the spirit of the book, like of what the book is truly about, and the spirit of the book is perfectly captured. Miloš Forman did a great job. Bo Goldman wrote the screenplay, and it is a great movie and a great screenplay, but stylistically completely different. Because, Esmeralda, do you know, I mean, the book is told from the point of view of the silent Indian. Like, he's the narrator of the book. It's all told from his perspective, which changes everything. You know, because I'd seen the movie. I saw the movie when I was like, I mean, I was too young to see it. When it came out in 75, so I saw it when I was 10. And I loved it. And then a few years later, I picked up the book and I read it. And I was like, I remember being like one chapter in going, what? So, but a great book and a great movie. But again, different. It was a little bit like the Princess Bride. Like, different, both good, but different on so many levels. All right, so we got some Hemingway here. So The Old Man and the Sea is here. Only read in Oak Park. You can only read that in Oak Park. We've got...
Or his House of Cats in Cuba.
let's see. You know what? You know what? Here's a book I've never read. Have you read A Separate Piece?
I have not.
Esmeralda, have you read A Separate Piece?
I haven't, no.
That's one of those ones that's on the curriculum list. It's been around forever that I have not read. And you know what I was told? What I was told to read that one several times. John Knowles wrote it. I was told to read that one several times because everybody tells me that if I like A Chocolate War, which is one of my favorite books of all time, I would love A Separate Piece. And Chocolate War, the poll quotes that are on the book, at least two of the poll quotes compare it to A Separate Piece. I can't believe I haven't read it. I don't know. That's a book, I think. Chocolate War. That's a book that I think should be on the curriculum. Robert Cormier wrote that book, and it's one of my favorite books of all time. I've told this story before. Eighth grade, I led the class in book reports because I was such a dorky, voracious reader. It's amazing to me the difference between my grade school education and my commitment to what happened in to what happened in high school. I mean, I went from like a 3.6. You know, to a 2.2, and it was just what happened when I got into high school. Because in eighth grade, I was a voracious reader, and I led the class in book reports, and so most of them were horror books and stuff. Like I was reading, I wrote a lot of book reports on Poe because we could read whatever we wanted. There wasn't an assignment. It was like, you know, these book reports. She would give us suggestions, you know, of books. Miss Nagel was her name. And she would give us suggestions for books, and I had the most book reports. So at the end of the year, like eighth grade. We were about to graduate at the end of the year. I had the most book reports. So she gave me a copy of this book called The Chocolate War. And she's like, I think you'd like this book. I think you really would enjoy this book. And so I read it, and it was a game changer for me. It really was. The total game changer. It's a movie that taught me to be cynical, or it's a book that taught me to be cynical. It taught me to question all authority. It was about this Catholic boys' school that had an annual chocolate sale drive that was corrupted by one of the brothers. There was a gang of students that pretty much ran the school called the Vigils, and there was this new kid, Jerry Renault, was this new kid who ended up at the school and was forced to take an assignment from one of these Vigils to refuse to sell the candy. That was his assignment. And it takes it from there. And it came out during Watergate, and it was an allegory about Watergate. It was an allegory about corruption. And it really blew my mind. And it's a great, 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 great book. And it's a young adult book. And anybody who has like a 14, 15-year-old kid who you want to suggest a book to them, A Chocolate War, The Chocolate War is truly an amazing book. They made a mediocre movie out of it. Keith Gordon, the actor who became director, he directed it and adapted it. And I thought it was pretty good for about the first couple of thirds. I thought John Glover was great as Brother Leon, who is like sort of the bad guy in it. But he completely changed the ending, and I wanted to kill him. Like, I remember during the last 10 minutes of the movie, I'm like, you can't do this. And, like, it underscores everything that the book is about. Like, the ending of the movie is like, so wrong. It's so, so wrong. Made me so mad. And that's one of those instances, Dan, you know, like, what if they changed the ending of Grapes of Wrath?
Right, no.
You know what I mean? Like, the last 15 minutes of Grapes of Wrath, everybody is happy, you know? No. And they cut the speech, the big speech that Henry Fonda has. Let's cut that.
Nope.
Yeah. So anyway, they completely changed the ending, Keith Gordon did, and I was with it for a while, and I remember walking out of the screening, and I was so pissed. I was so mad. And Roy was like, what's wrong? And I'm like, have you read the book? And Roy's like, no, I haven't. Roy Leonard, by the way. That's my Roy Leonard. No, I haven't. I said, well, you should. I was so angry. But anyway, Chocolate War, a great, great book that I actually think should be taught in school. It is a great, and I want to thank Miss Nagel. She's probably not listening. Maybe doesn't even live here in Chicago anymore, but that made a very, very big impact on me. That book was kind of a game changer for me, and I want to thank Mrs. Nagel for doing that for me. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll wrap up the discussion about books that you read in school. What about you guys? I want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio. Welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday is continuing, and that is, of course, War with Why Can't We Be Friends, the 708 area code, finishing up their Triple Play on this Thursday. We're going to be talking about great road trip movies in honor of our good friend Colin, who's going on a road trip. He's going down to New Orleans. Yeah, it's always a good time to go to New Orleans at the end of July. That's always the best time to go, because if you want to lose some weight by sweating, that's a very good time to go. We are talking about the books that you were assigned in school. What other books do you think should be assigned? And which ones stayed with you? Which ones didn't? All that good stuff. 312-981-7200. And by the way, the article that spawned this about Disrupt Text, that's on our Facebook page, Dan, right? The article? You can read it. You can read this really interesting article about this group talking about maybe questioning some of these books that have been perennials, as being taught in schools. So you can check out that article at facebook.com/NickDisha. All right, here's Kevin on WGN. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
I have actually gone back to what we were talking about, the books that I was starting to name off. I've had my kids read.
Your kids have read The Chocolate War?
Yes.
What did they think?
My kids have loved the books that I've had them read, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Chocolate War is one that they really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
My daughter really did not like The Pig Man. That just upset her too much.
Mm-hmm.
But Dinky Hocker Shoots Smack, I did not have them read that.
Yeah.
It's one of them that I read, but, I kind of tossed stuff out there, but it just wasn't high enough on the priority list. But I Was a Teenage Baboon. I loved I Was a Teenage Baboon so much, I got kicked out of class for laughing.
While you were reading it?
While I was reading the book, I busted up laughing so many times. I got kicked out of class like 3 times reading the book.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah, so what about do you have your kids like read stuff like S.E. Hinton and things like that?
Yes. Yeah, all of them by S.E. Hinton except Tex.
Mm-hmm.
Forget Tex. Hey, Tex is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the others, the Outsiders, and That Was Then, This Is Now, yeah. And Rumblefish.
Right.
But anything by S.E. Hinton. And I guess I'm just rambling now. I don't know what else to.
Well, no, it's cool that it's cool that you're having your kids read the books that you read. I find that really, really interesting and really cool, especially, it's a different generation. And I like the fact that it's not the school that's assigning them. You're just like, hey, you should read these books. I read them at your age, and maybe you'll like them. And I love the fact that, like, you have had your kids read The Chocolate War, because I really do think that that's a game changer. All right, Kevin, got to run. Thanks, man. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got a couple more texts here. Adrian Grandma Hawk, Chicago. So I've been listening to books on tape for years due to working 2 jobs. Never get a book read by the author. They cannot read their own work. Only professional narrators do them justice. Some of the best are Barbara Rosenblatt, George Guidel, Davina Porter, Nathaniel Parker. There's also Jim Dale, a character actor singer who played the villain in Disney's Pete's Dragon, who narrates all the Harry Potter books, and he does all the voices. Yeah, you know what? I've heard an example of... I read the Harry Potter books. I didn't read them on. I read all the Harry Potter books, but I didn't. Never did the books on tape. But I did hear a portion of them because this guy's supposed to be so amazing. This Jim Dale, and it is great. Like this because they did. I think they did like a piece on him on a television show talking about how this guy is, like one of the most creative books on tape readers of all time, and. And yeah, I've heard him do these. I've heard him a section of reading one of the Harry Potter books, and it's really, really great. The Harry Potter books are great for kids too, obviously, and they're terrific books. 815 area code says, I get terrible migraines. I saw Cuckoo's Nest when I had one, and I threw up when Nicholson got the ECT treatments. Oh man, that's bad timing right there to get a migraine during that part of the movie. Well, it's bad to get a migraine anytime, but particularly then. Wow. So anyway, I'm glad. Thank you, Adrian, for sending the names of these people. Barbara Rosenblatt, George Guidel, Davina Porter, Nathaniel Parker. Those are some of the best professional narrators doing books on tape. And Adrian says that you should never get a book read by the author because they can't read their own work. That's interesting. That's interesting. Maybe that was the problem, Esmeralda, with the Aziz Ansari.
Yeah, it was too much. That book is very, at least in the beginning, statistic heavy.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really going over too well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Well, those are some thoughts on books that you went to, that you learned about in high school and whether they stayed with you or not. And very, very cool. Thank you for all the calls. Thank you for all the texts.